This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith courts one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal Nation. Welcome to this special edition of Two Birds on a Bat. I'm your host, Jim Cromer. Let me welcome in my partner in crime over here, Steve-O. What's going on, bud?
Oh, man, it's a great day out, isn't it? We got a real special guest in studio with us today. We're trying the Facebook Live thing. So
First time. We're going to give it a shot.
Hopefully it's got my slimming side over here, the good profile. So we got you straight on, Jason Isringhausen in studio straight on, and they get the fat guy view over here.
Well, it's, the camera adds 10 pounds. There's like five cameras. As my good friend Steve-O just mentioned, we have a great guest in studio today. We call it a special edition. We're real excited to bring you what we feel is just a great episode with a local product that everybody kind of knows in this community, and that is him, the man himself, Jason Isringhausen. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, obviously, you're friends with a lot of guys. You played ball with some friends of mine, my brother included, and you know Steve from being in the community, a lot of the guys here at Lineup Media. That local story with you was something that really captivated this. It's kind of culminated now with one of the reasons we brought you in today. It's kind of a follow-up to an episode that we did, a special edition a couple weeks ago, with Brian Finch from the St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Fame. You're up for election this year. It's got to be a proud moment for you as a former Cardinal and a local guy.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get mentioned in the same breath as the Lou Brocks, the Bruce Sutters, you know, the Jim Edmonds, the Willie McGees, it's one of those things where, you know, as a kid you grow up dreaming of playing for the Cardinals when you're from this area, and now to be mentioned in that same breath with those guys, it's pretty amazing.
Well, what I know about you from back then, and some of the stuff we'll keep off air. Just kidding. No, seriously, is that you were an unbelievable player in general. You were an athlete. You were a shortstop. So my guess is you probably spent many a day in your backyard hitting a game-winning home run in Game 7. But what you wound up doing was closing out games after starting as a starting pitcher in the league. Just an example of athleticism kind of plays.
Well, it's funny you say that because, I mean, I'm playing against Steve-O and guys like that growing up. I was a catcher, played the outfield, played the infield, and I wasn't the best guy on the team. I was probably the third, fourth, fifth best player on our high school team, but went to Lewis and Clark, played the outfield, got drafted by the Mets then, and they said you were too slow to play the outfield, I went to the tryout camp, so they made me a pitcher, and I said, just teach me how to do it, and 3 years later, I was in the big leagues.
Now, when you got drafted by the Mets, I remember, you know, it was an exciting time because, like I said, you had played ball with some friends of ours. My brother had played one year with you at Lewis and Clark. It was an exciting thing. You know, a local guy from a local junior college gets drafted. And then it wasn't long. We were hearing these stories of this unbelievable, prospect class of Mets pitchers. They had, it was the first time I had ever really paid attention to it. They had you guys listed as the potential starting rotation for, whatever year that was going to be. It was you. Bill Pulsifer was the other guy. There was four of you guys. God, who were the
other?
Paul Wilson.
And there might have been, a Bobby Jones or Castillo.
That might have been it.
Yeah.
But they had you guys as, the projected opening day rotation for, 3 years down the road or something. You know, you look at your time as it kind of came full circle there, and you wind up at the back of the bullpen. How did that transition happen for you?
Yeah, it was, you know, I came up in 95, started all of 95, came back in 96, started all of 96, and then started having elbow problems and came back from my first Tommy John, was pitching in the bullpen, wasn't able to bounce back in between starts very well, so they wanted to make me a long reliever. Was a long reliever. I got my first save pitching three innings for New York 1 year, and then that was in 99. And then I got traded that year to Oakland, and Billy Bean said I was going to be the closer there. I got there, and there was a gentleman, Doug Jones, who had over 300 saves as a closer. He was there, and he kind of just kind of taught me the ropes a little bit and just took off from there.
Was it Billy Bean or was it Brad Pitt? Which one was it that told you you're going to be a closer?
It was Billy Bean. There was no Brad Pitt, but having Brad Pitt say my name in the movie gave me some points with my wife, so it worked out well.
Hey, you got to take your points where you can get them.
Exactly. Absolutely.
What, you know, you look back at your time, is there even a, I mean, does it even really matter to, I mean, did you prefer starting versus closing, or were you just happy to play?
No, I mean, once I got to do both, I really enjoyed pitching out of the bullpen. I loved closing. I loved the adrenaline part of it. I loved the fact that I could play every day, you know, come to the park every day ready to go. When I was younger, when I was starting, those 4 days off in between was usually a lot of trouble for me, got into some trouble. So it was good to be able to come in every day knowing that I could play, and it kept my mind sharper, kept me more into the game, and, you know, it worked out well for me.
Hey, now, we said we weren't going to talk about those stories there. We would leave those out. No, it was a really, you know, interesting thing to watch. Like I said, the local connection. So naturally, at that time, people pay attention. Well, all of a sudden, then you're available. You're at this time now, you're one of the best closers in the league. The St. Louis Cardinals have a need. I remember, you know, it seemed logical, obviously, to the local community. How did that whole thing play out, if you don't mind sharing with us how you wound up here?
It was really between two teams. I have two sisters that live in Dallas area. So we had negotiated with my agent and myself with the Cardinals a little bit and with the Rangers. And I had left that morning to go play golf with a friend of mine, Chris Wilderman. And I told my wife, hey, we're signing with the Rangers later today. And she's like, whatever you're going to do, just do it. And I go golfing, and then Mr. DeWitt calls me on the phone, and I'm out there golfing. And he's like, hey, what's it going to take to get you to come to the Cardinals? So we talked for a little while, and then I just told my buddy, I said, you know, what should I do? He goes, what do you mean, what should you do? It's kind of an easy thing. I mean, there was more money on the table with the Rangers, but being able to come back home and pitch, it was a no-brainer. So when I got home from golfing, I had to tell my wife, scratch that deal. We're going to sign with the Cardinals. So it was kind of a whirlwind kind of day, but it was, I think I made the right choice.
What was this gentleman's name, Chris?
Chris Wilderman.
So he actually is
he's the
reason
one that,
that
yeah.
you're in St. Louis. Well,
he's
hey,
the
if
reason.
He's out there, thank
you. You know, the funny thing is that, you know, the cool thing about Jason is because of the connection to the area, like Chris's daughter and my daughter played softball together, and a lot of the guys that he grew up with, he's still, you know, best of friends with these guys. They get together all the time. He's a dude like we are with our buddies, and you know, and obviously he played ball with a lot of guys that we knew up there at Lewis and Clark. So he reminds me a lot of me.
So he except for he can run it up there in the high 90s.
Now see, I attribute that. And you remember
to yourself.
It
to yourself.
But, you know, okay. I used to talk about this when we used to coach the kids that. You know, he was, for a long time, if I remember correctly, he hosed me out at, he was playing center field. I tried to score from second. And
bad choice.
And Sean, he threw one. Sean Watson knocked me down. Sean, who is probably the best player on their team, he's like 6'6", just a monster of a guy.
I played ball with him.
Yeah.
He was a dandy.
Exactly.
He had a lot of fun, too.
But let me tell you what, he was a man out there
yes.
amongst boys, and I think
yes.
I probably weighed about $1.17, and he just threw me down at the plate. But playing outfield and long toss and everything like that strengthened the arm, and he wasn't one of the rotating pitchers that they had in high school. So his arm was fresh and live. He gets to college, and he's running up there in the 90s, and they say, hey, we're going to make you in a pitcher, right?
Yeah, and that, there's a lot of people that have done that. You know, Trevor Rosenthal, Jason Mott, you know, Bob Forsch back in the day. It's the conversion because a lot of kids, you know, your arm's fresher,
yeah.
so to speak. You haven't used it all that much to throw off the mound. And You know, everybody was a pretty good athlete. That switches over usually, and it was fun. We had three guys drafted off my senior class, mm-hmm. myself, Sean Watson, and Matt Booz, and we were all three drafted and played a little, you know, played baseball from there on out. But it was a good group of guys, and we still all stay in touch. We have our Super Bowl parties, our fantasy draft parties every once in a while, and just anytime we can all get together, we love doing it.
Any games of in-between? Cards?
No, not anymore. We saved those for those long baseball trips back in the day for the Legion, and I think against the Eversville Legion teams back in the day, we swapped money quite a bit.
Let me tell you what, Watson used to deal from the bottom of the deck. I know that.
Well, you know, he's obviously a great guy. A lot of people that probably follow us, if you're from the area, a lot of people know Waddy. He reminds me of Shaq. He's like this giant, isn't he? Like, he's this big guy. And you walk up to him, and you've almost got to get right up next to him to hear him talk. He's like, "Hey, man, what's going on?"
He's a gentle giant.
Yeah, he's a dandy.
His nickname was Big Country when we played with the Mets together in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
So everybody called him Big Country.
How was that? You're from, you know, Brighton, Illinois, basically, right? And you wind up in the minor leagues for the Mets with one of your best friends. How does that play out?
I mean, it worked out great because, you know, there's such a culture shock when you get there, coming from a small town of Brighton, and you have every ethnicity you can think of in the world there playing baseball with you, with the language barriers and stuff. And then we had that safety blanket where we lived together. We stayed together in the same room and stuff like that, so we always had each other to fall back on. And then Waddy had shoulder problems, and he was never able to bounce back from that last shoulder surgery. So it was like, I talked about this, I got into my high school Hall of Fame, so to speak, and at the speech, I talked about losing he was my, you know, safety net in the minor leagues. So once he left, I mean, it was hard for me for a little bit, but then it was just gave me a reason just to push harder.
You know, you go through this process, right? I mean, you probably improbable to you if you think back and look at it, right? I mean, again, Godfrey, Illinois to New York. When did you really think I got a chance here? Was there a moment? Was it a time frame? Was it a stretch? Was it anything in particular?
No, the only thing that really sticks out was it was the spring training. In 95, I started the year in AA. I went from AA, AAA to the big leagues. In that spring training, we have like a live BP session. And I threw my 30 pitches and I used one baseball the whole time. Nobody fouled it off. Nobody hit it. Nobody. And I was like, wow, this is a... Everything's starting to come in full effect now and kind of full circle, and it really made me realize that maybe I have a chance to do this.
Probably a few pretty good players, too, you might have been thrown to.
Yeah, we were throwing against AA and AAA guys, yeah. And nobody touched the ball, and I used the same ball the whole time.
Amazing.
And I was like, man, this might be something I might be able to do. And then I started really starting to concentrate a little more on it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You, you know, first time you got some real money, what'd you do? Anything, you know, did you splurge on anything?
No, I actually had to pay my mom back. My mom, all through minor league, she kept a ledger of how much money they gave me. So when I came back from my first big league camp, big league season, mom gave me a bill, and it was for like $14,000. So I came back with a little money in my pocket, and I had to pay my mom back, so it was all gone.
Interest? Was there interest on that as well?
Or? No interest. But
well, that's a great loan.
You got to remember, then, I mean, we made $109,000. As a rookie then, and then now they're making over 500. So
yeah, that's not bad. Not a bad gig.
Yeah,
not,
but
you weren't
still,
complaining. You weren't.
No, I wasn't complaining at all. I mean, I'm back in Brighton, living in mom and dad's house with some money in my pocket. So,
but if you look at it, 17 years is that what I'm totaling up here in the bigs?
Yeah,
I mean that's I would have never dreamed it. And we did a little research, obviously, when we knew you were coming on the show. And after the Cardinals, you had, you know, another half of the career. You had a couple more surgeries and, you know, whether it was hips or elbows and everything. But you went on to, you know, try to continue that.
I want to talk about that because that's the part of the game that we take for granted as fans a little bit. Obviously, we're aware of injuries. Tommy John is such a big thing now. You know, when your favorite players are not on the field, it's an obvious concern. You had... You know, we're sitting here talking before the show just to get a little educated about maybe some things about you we didn't know that we could talk about. You know, I think everybody knew you had a Tommy John. I didn't know you had three. And is that right? You're the only pitcher to throw after three?
That's what they told me.
A record you don't want, really, probably.
Yeah. And still, like, to this day, that's like my elbow's the only thing that doesn't hurt anymore.
You're kidding.
Everything up back, knees, you know, shoulders are hurting, but the elbow's good.
But the thing that shocks you is it's funny, you hear three Tommy Johns, and, I mean, it just makes you kind of you know, back up a second. But so Steve-O says, so you had three arm surgery, and you said, no, I actually had 11 arm surgery. So the sacrifice to do this, that's the part of the game that we really don't see as fans. And we may take it for granted, and I'm sure there's a lot of guys who are like, well, they're paid awful well. But, man, I got to tell you, to have your body cut on, to go through all that, the rehab, all that, it's really part of the reason why there is such a high risk, high reward.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's just, you know, you sacrifice your body, so to speak, but you're doing it mainly for the guy next to you on the field. And, I mean, granted, the money's great, but then again, you can only make money for so long as an athlete because your body usually gives out. And it was funny. I mean, I'm not to plug him, but I was sitting with Fast Eddie the other day, and we were talking. I'm like, you get to do this for
plug
the rest
him
of
away.
Your life.
I love him.
I said, you get to do this for the rest of your life. Make this, you know, make great money. He goes, yeah, but I'd rather have that one lump sum, and then I don't have to work anymore. I'm like, well, I guess you can look at it both ways.
So. Wait a minute. We both know him. Yeah. I called on him when I was at Anheuser-Busch for the longest time, and obviously you know him very well. I don't know that it'd be a good idea for him to just get one lump sum and then not get any after a while. I don't know. He may have a good time with that money, and then he'd be like, okay, well, now what?
Yeah, he has a good time no matter what.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of fun over the years. It would be funny. I'd be rehabbing. I was rehabbing in Birmingham, Alabama, playing for the Biscuits.
Jake DePue was just there.
Yeah, for Tampa. Yeah. And I get a knock on my door, and I'm like, who's knocking on my – I open up the door, and it's Fast Eddie. He's like, hey, I heard you were down here. I just came down to see you. Let's go out. And I was like, okay, here we go.
So you knew you weren't getting back till the next day.
Yeah.
That's how that goes. Rehab today.
Yeah, so that's how much fun we've always had together. And when I got my 300 save in San Diego, I'm sitting at the Old Crow bar, and we're having drinks, me and a couple other buddies, and I hear this voice down the way, and Fast Eddie's sitting at the end of the bar.
Now, is this Big Ed or Little Ed?
Both of them were there. Oh. Fast Eddie and his dad.
He fly out for
they
it?
Came out just to see it. They didn't know, have any idea that I was going to get my 300 saved, but he was there to see it, and he was there to celebrate with me. So it's been fun.
And the celebration is always a little more intense when Big Ed and Little Ed especially were involved.
When Big Ed was around, yeah, it got to be a little fun, and it was a good night. It was a night that I'll always remember.
Truly legendary.
Yes.
And that brings us to something that I'm sure – you know, had to weigh in a little bit in your decision. Now, again, thanks to Chris, my thoughts are some of his thinking may have been, come on, man, you're from here. It's the St. Louis Cardinals and then the fans. You know, did you think at all about what that was going to be like? I mean, did that come into your mind at all? Like, man, I'm from here. This is going to be kind of a geeked up deal with these fans.
Yeah, I mean, everything that, you know, that's when you come a free agent and you're thinking about signing somewhere, there's so much that goes into the decision, and that was part of it. And that was the hardest part. I think it was just being able to tell people no, and then that's not something I'm really good at.
Yeah.
You know, your best friends come out of the woodwork, so to speak. Wanting tickets to this, wanting tickets to that, or wanting to sign this, or come speak here, come speak there, and it's just you can only be pulled in so many directions. So that was the hardest part for me. It was just telling people that I knew and that I was friends with. I had to tell them no a lot, and that wore on me a little bit, but it was just part of what I had to do.
Well, you can't be everything to everybody. That's the hard part. I had the opportunity to talk to Yachty about that, you know, and he says, you know, hey, sometimes get a bad rap because you're somewhere and everybody wants you to do this, and you just can't be everything to everybody all the time. And sometimes you just need a moment of peace or want to be with your family. You know, it's a hard thing. And, you know, I was talking to him and I said, you know, the thing is that when somebody sees you out in public, their thought process is this may be the only time in my life I'm ever. So, and I know you guys understand that, but again, you're human. So, but the fans though, over the years, it's had to have been a great relationship for you. I mean, really.
Yeah. I mean, as a closer though, you're either the hero or the
goat.
Oh,
that's true.
So you either have fans love you or they hate you. There's really no in between. And that last, I guess the last year of my career here was rough. Getting booed at times, but that's what the fans do. That's what they pay their money to see. And especially fans of St. Louis Cardinal baseball, they expect, you know, good players, good play on the field, and I wasn't able to do it at times, and they let me know about it, but that's part of the game.
Did it bother you when they booed? Or were you kind of at that juncture, you'd been doing this long enough, and it just kind of rolled off you like, hey, you know, it is what it is?
Yeah, a little bit of both, you know. Cause,
you wouldn't
be
human, I guess, if it didn't.
You know, if I was in New York and I got booed, you expect it.
You know,
but when you're at home, that's probably the only thing, because it was home for me. So, yeah, it stings a little bit, but then you know you have your real fans who love you and care about you. But, like I said, that's the nature of the beast, being the closer for the St. Louis Cardinals. You're supposed to win every game.
Was it harder on your family maybe when you got booed?
Yeah. Dad always complained to me. He goes, now I got to hear the crap in the morning at the cafe in Brighton. And he goes in for coffee and everybody's like, what happened to your kid last night? So it was great when we won the World Series in 06. I got my dad a real ring. So he got to wear it into the cafe.
So every time somebody says something, say, hey, you got one.
Exactly.
Of these.
So it was fun.
Now, when you started, and again, we'll go kind of come full circle now about some of the things we don't want to talk about on air probably, but man, can you imagine playing today with social media?
No, I would never. No, and that's like what's part of what I do with the kids today is like, you know, we try to make them think 2, 3, 4 times before they hit that send button, you know, because everybody tries to tweet something out or send something out when you're angry or you've had a couple drinks and things like that. And you really have to be careful what you do because once it's out there, it never goes away.
I mean, do you ever take a look at you know, like Facebook? We have some great partners on Facebook with some of these Facebook pages that have helped us grow our show. It's amazing the power of social media. You do something, you send it out. Have you ever checked out some of these great Facebook pages?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them around, and I know one of them happened, you know, during the World Series that one year with the Rally Squirrel. So now we've got RallySquirrel.com on Facebook, who's got a ton of followers, almost 100,000. So when you see when they put the squirrel on the World Series ring, you know it's a big deal. So it's a great Facebook page.
You know, the gentleman. Interesting thing about this, and I don't know if you listen to the show all the time, but we have him on every Monday. His name's Nate McHenry. He's actually from Colorado, and when the thing happened, he very smartly just went out and got the name, and he's turned it into this great site that you can go to. And we do appreciate him very much. It's interesting that when we were talking about it, you were aware of that one. Again, to your point, when they put the squirrel on the ring, you know it's kind of
a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal, all right.
Yeah, and he's been a big deal to us, and we do appreciate him. You know, almost to 100,000 followers. Make sure you check that one out, RallySquirrel.com. Just type it in the search bar on Facebook. Cardinal Nation's another good one. That gentleman's named Chris Lawless. You've probably seen that one as well. That's a big one. Cardinal Freak. I mean, these guys.
It goes on and on. And it's what I tell people is like playing for the Cardinals is like playing for the Yankees of the National League.
Yeah.
It's everywhere that we went on the road, there was usually just as many, if not more, Cardinals fans in the park as there was the home team.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where Cardinal Nation, the following that this team has, it's just amazing. And the fans are amazing.
Any, do you keep anything? Like, I'm sure you kept a lot of things. Is there anything you have that you look at and think that is the one thing I kept that, I mean, I could never handle losing?
No, not really. Not, you know, at one time I did. You know, I had my 100 and 200 and 300 career save balls, and my daughter has them in her, like, little curio cabinet.
Yeah.
So I thought those were pretty cool, but then, you know, once you have kids and stuff, it's like, none of this stuff means anything anymore. But, you know, I have some fun autographs I've gotten through the years. You know, Jeter and Clemens and Bonds and Gwynn, guys that I appreciate how they went about their business and how good they were. I was never that so-called green fly where I got a ton of autographs from people like some people do. So the ones I have actually mean something to me.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned some of the players historically large within the game,
right.
You know, almost larger than life figures. You know, one of the reasons we brought you on here today is, you know, you have an opportunity now to become almost, you know, I don't know, immortal, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting into a Hall of Fame.
Right. So you're up against well, first off, let's talk about what that means to you to even be nominated to possibly spend your life and then your afterlife as a Cardinal Hall of Famer.
Well, it's funny because I remember we won the World Series in 06, and I've got pictures of me holding Madeline, my oldest daughter, in my arms, and she wasn't very big. She's about the size of my little one now. So my oldest daughter got to actually live the life a little bit and know what baseball was, but the little one doesn't. And she just goes, Daddy, why does people come up and ask you to sign stuff? And, you know, she just doesn't understand it, so I mean, that's part of the reason why to get to elected something like that, where she one day could take her kids to see Grandpa was actually Grandpa actually did something really cool one time. And, you know, to be enshrined in that Hall of Fame and to be able to wear that red coat every opening day, I mean, it's a pretty special thing to be in that group with those guys that are in there, too.
Now, you played, you were born in 72, so you grew up in the 80s. There's some pretty cool names on this list that My guess is you were probably pretty impressed with as a fan. You know, you played with at least couple of these guys, right?
Rowland and Renteria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't play with McGuire, though.
No. I was kind of chasing him around. When he got traded to St. Louis, I went to Oakland. And then when he left St. Louis, I came to St. Louis.
But you got to see Hernandez play in the 80s. I mean, we all were 80s fans of the Cardinals, obviously. You've been around and met McCarver, I'm sure, more than a handful of times. Everybody's knows who Steve Carlton is. An interesting class. It's got to be, for you, like I said, Steve Carlton, Keith Hernandez. I mean, this is not an easy thing to get elected, for Pete's sake.
There's some cool names on there. And what's funny now is that since I still do things with the Cardinals, and I do these fantasy camps with the Cardinals, and then when I'm an instructor, I get to hang out with Willie and Ozzy and Bruce Sutter and Whitey and Gibby and everybody, and just kind of rub elbows with them and give each other crap. And Bruce is always wearing me out about how bad of a hitter I am on fantasy camps. And it's just been fun. And I play with Jim Edmonds, guys that have been elected. Mike Shannon, hung out with him. You get to hang out with McCarver. Keith Hernandez, when I played for the Mets the second time, he was an announcer. He helped me out with a lot of different stuff. And, sit down at the hotel bar and have a beer with him and talk baseball and talk about how watching them when I was growing up and I wanted to be this, I wanted to be that. And now you get to rub elbows with him. It's kind of a cool deal.
Yeah, I mean, the fantasy camps. Now, do you enjoy – I mean, that's got to be fun.
Oh, we have an absolute ball. And it's funny, we have one every summer, and we do it at Busch Stadium, and all the guys get to stay in the visiting locker room. But now this year, the Cardinals pulled out all stops, and we're doing it at Cooperstown, and we'll be playing on the double-day field there in Cooperstown.
Really? Going up for that?
Yeah, they're flying us out there, and it's a great time. I think it's like myself and Reggie Sanders and Larry Walker and Brian Jordan – and a bunch of guys. I mean, it's a great time, and you meet so many crazy people that you never would meet, and the relationships you build. There's been guys come to every single Cardinals camp from day one.
The rumor is Brian Jordan could probably still play.
Yeah, he's still built pretty good. I think he just turned 50, and I think he's won the championship the last 2 years, and it's been against me, so I keep losing to Jordan, but we have a good time doing it.
Yeah, well, there was, and I have this wrong, but it was on the news. Wasn't there a cool thing where, like, didn't you hit a ball, like, with the game on the line, and he made a diving catch to win the game?
That was last summer. I mean, the game was on the line, and I hit a line drive in the gap, and he comes running over and dives, and they
48,
win,
49 years old.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that go there, the old players, we actually play pretty hard for these guys because you never want to leave a bad taste in their mouth, or you never want them to look at you and say, well, this guy's a piece of you-know-what. So we tried to play as hard as we can for him.
I ran into Dave Gerber, and he just went to the last one. Yeah. And he said that he was playing again. He said Jordan hit one, a bomb foul. Yeah. He's like, this guy can still rake, man.
Yeah, I mean, granted, there's 50, 60-year-old guys pitching, and it's not coming there very hard. So it's almost sometimes like slow-pitch softball. But it's a good time, and if anybody ever has the chance to do it, you got to do it once if you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, well, Timmy Funkhauser did it a couple years ago.
Yeah, he did it, a good friend of ours. Yep, I was down there with him.
And he says that he goes, if you ever get a chance, and I still currently play man ball, what we call it, but he keeps telling
me he was going to get that.
I know. He keeps telling me. He goes, Flowers, you got to go do it. Yeah. You got to go do it. It's awesome. And so eventually we'll get down there and to be in Jupiter. And play on Roger Dean.
In January, it's not a bad idea to get out of here.
Exactly.
And go
pretty
down
good
to
deal.
Florida.
You mentioned the World Series ring. Is there any moment in the game that, is it the 300 save, your crowning moment? Is there something that you'll never forget? Or is just the whole ride, really?
It's the whole ride. You meet so many great guys. I mean, I had the honor of playing with Albert for 7 years.
Yeah.
The best hitter of our generation, probably. And, watching him every single day was just a pure enjoyment. But probably the 300 save because I started that 1 year. I needed 11 saves for it in St. Louis, and all things went haywire. And I ended up leaving St. Louis, and I was 7 saves shy. And it took me 2.5 years and another Tommy John to get those last 7. And, it was pretty rewarding to do it. But in that same sentence, it was just a sigh of relief, and then knowing that last game I pitched in 12 in Anaheim, it was kind of a struck out Michael Young to end my career, and it was one of those things where I was kind of like just a big relief, and it was time to go home. So those are the ones that kind of stand out.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, now we got to go back a few years, and maybe my memory is not exactly perfect, but I think the Cardinals kind of were good to you. They tried, I think, to do everything they could for you to get that save here, and it just
didn't work out.
Yeah,
you know, it was for whatever reason, and you know, to this day I thank Mr. DeWitt and Walt Jockety and John Mozeliak, and then Mr. Mozeliak's brought me back to still work with the kids and stuff after everything that we've been through. So it's been in my mind, it's been a great relationship, and I just hope they feel the same way. So hopefully, you know, if the voting goes well, I'll be connected to them for a lifetime, and it would be great. It would just be a great honor.
So, Jim, do I have this right on the voting? It's cardinals.com/Hall of Fame.
You have it right.
I do have it right.
Very surprising.
Exactly. And then you can get in there, and you can vote for two of the guys, I think, per day.
You can stack the stuff out of it.
So you can truly say vote early and vote often. Yeah. You can really say that
right.
in this one. Okay.
So, and the voting ends on the 14th of April.
Uh-huh.
So we got, what is that, 9 days, if my math is correct? Yeah. I know there's no math on this show.
Yeah, we're not allowed to do it.
Not allowed to do it. But anyway, so guys, you got to get out there. We're going to make a push with our group and with RallySquirrel.com promoting it and Cardinal Nation and all of our Facebook followers out there. That we really want to make a push to get you, what do you wear, size 42 now? What is that, 42 short?
Maybe 46 now.
46.
It used to be 42.
Yeah, we got pictures
of
those.
When you get
days.
A red jacket, if the size changes each year, they'll probably get you a new one, would be my guess.
Yeah. Oh, they say that, hey.
My guess is there's a couple of, Bruce Sutter's probably needed a different one almost every year.
Brian Finch says you get your name, it's custom made, get
really?
The name on the inside. And will you go with Izzy or Isringhausen? What are you going to go with on the inside?
I don't know. It all depends if they ask me if I have a choice.
Because will it really matter?
No, it wouldn't matter at all. It could be just a horse blanket. I wouldn't care. But
honestly, what would it mean to you? I mean, can you imagine getting that call?
No, you know, I guess you always have that dream of making it to Cooperstown, you know, when you first start off. That's what everybody wants to do. But you realize that's kind of a far-fetched idea. But this to make this Hall of Fame would mean probably twice as much to me than making the Cooperstown Hall of Fame, because this is home. This is where I grew up. I grew up a half hour from the stadium, and to watch all those years of the turf and the tarp and the tarp run over Vince and the Clydesdales.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many memories that we go on, and, you know, Willie catching that ball in Milwaukee during the 82 World Series. I mean, I just, you know, the memories I have, and that for that to happen here, it's just, it'd be a dream come true, and it's something that it'd mean a lot more to my family, I think, than myself, because I just want my daughters to enjoy it and maybe be cool for one day, because right now I'm the mean dad all the time.
Oh my goodness.
I find that hard to believe.
Hey, you had something I wanted to ask you about, probably a tough thing. You had a lot of unbelievable things happen to you, but you also went through what was a sad time here in St. Louis. I remember the Daryl Kyle situation. I named my son, his middle name is Kyle, you know, because we were in the hospital when all that was going on. He was being born, and I was just taken aback by all the unbelievable statements from players about the kind of man he was, what kind of father he was, things like that. We hadn't picked out a middle name, so I just said, what about Kyle? It just, you know, and, you know, to go through something like that when you've had these unbelievable, you know, these ups, I mean, that had to be a rough thing. I mean, you guys are professional athletes, but at the end of the day, you're people. That had to be a rough thing.
Well, it is rough, because of the simple fact that your teammates become your family, because you're with them more than you're with your actual family. And I lost two guys. I lost Josh Hancock.
Yeah,
also.
I forgot about
so,
that.
So, I mean,
yeah.
We've lost, not very many people can say that they've lost two teammates in
it's
a career. And, but yeah, it was hard. You know, we're in Chicago and we get the phone call. We just figured, you know, you're in Chicago. People are late.
Yeah.
You know, you have the Chicago day games and you miss a bus or you miss
so
a cab.
So, were you at the stadium?
We were at the stadium and everybody's like, you know, Daryl's not here. So, we're like,
now,
oh.
Was your family with you? Or were you alone on that trip?
I think I was alone that trip.
See, that was the thing that we had heard. Obviously, with you being local, the thing that we had heard that was panicky was the rumor got out, and the families are calling, trying to make sure their loved one is answering a phone. And obviously, you guys are in a thing. Nobody's answering their. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm getting chills thinking about it, because I remember it only because we had knew a couple people. And it's like, I can't even imagine what is going on right now. And then to see you guys on the field, I just remember, like I said, we were in the hospital, and I just remember going through it. And like I said, the tributes to the kind of man he was, and then, you know, the relationship I know you guys maintained for quite some time with his widow,
and his wife, and his little son.
Yeah, I mean, just, oh God, it's just thinking about it now, it's just, man, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. I mean, I had just gotten there. That was the year that I had signed there, so I was only there for a couple months, and you don't really realize what kind of man he is until you hear your teammates talk about him. And, you know, we were out there for BP. We went back in from BP. He still wasn't there. And then we got the word of what was going on. And it was just like seeing grown men break down and cry in front of you. It was like, oh my God, this is real. Yeah. And it just puts baseball in perspective. And then we took a day or two off, and then we came back and played. And it was rough on a lot of people, guys that were really close to him, like Mike Matheny and Matt Morris. Those guys, it was rough on them, Woody Williams. So it was something I'll never forget, and something that I never wish upon anybody to really have to go through. And then we lost Josh Hancock in that one year in a car wreck. And it's just been it's one of those things, you know, you never want to have to go through it. You think athletes are immortal, invincible, bulletproof. But, you know, it happens in a blink of an eye. Everything can disappear in a moment.
So, you know, then you get, you know, you talk about the lows, and then, and again, for yourself and every athlete, you know, there's probably times, and we don't, and again, these are the things we don't see. When you wake up in a hospital bed after a surgery and you're sitting there going, man, what am I doing? Right. Can I do this? Then you get to the highs, right? Like for you, and like we just had opening day here in St. Louis, you know how special that is to the fans. You know, take us through the opening day after a World Series win. I mean, for you, I mean, that's got to be.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's unreal when you.
This place was bananas. I remember it.
Like you sit out there and you know, you're just getting dressed in the clubhouse, and then all the red jackets start pouring into the clubhouse, saying hi to everybody. That was before they had the Cardinals Hall of Fame, so those were just the Cooperstown Hall of Famers. So that jacket's a little more important than the red, but then again, the red's important to us all right now. And so you know something special is going on. Then you walk out into the tunnel, and you're walking down to the wagon gate, and it's called the wagon gate for a reason because the Clydesdales are in the tunnel.
Right.
And you're standing there next to these Clydesdales. You get to pet the Clydesdales and the Dalmatian and everything, and then they go out, and it's like a freight train going around the stadium. You can feel the whole ground shaking.
And the stadium erupts.
The stadium erupts. It's loud. The stadium's shaking, and then you get on your little truck or your car, and you drive around, and you get to wave everybody. You mean you're treated like a rock star for – a half hour. But then the game starts, and then it's just normal baseball again, you know. But that whole scene that happens there, and it's funny to listen to players that have seen it, but then when they become a Cardinal, like Dexter Fowler talked about it, it's a special thing for sure.
How loud is it from the field level when you're down there? Because you got everybody's crescendoing down on you. Like this last time we were in right field bleachers. We've been up in Redbird Club or in the AB Suite in years past. And, you know, you only get, you know, the 50, 60 people around you that you can really hear. What's it like on the field, the loudness or the whole excitement level?
Yeah, I mean, it happened, you know, when something happens, and like if you can, I'm sitting here and we have a big picture of Busch Stadium. It's half of Busch Stadium is wide open because of the skyline.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go to somewhere like Yankee Stadium where they're right on top of you, all the way around you, it's deafening. You can't even hear yourself think. During the 06 championship game against the Mets, I mean, things would happen, you know, those games are going back and forth crazy, you know. Andy Chavez makes that home run catch on Roland. And we're underneath the stadium, and the whole stadium's shaking. There's dust coming out of the rafters and everything, and it's something that those are the things like you never really forget. And you talk about highs and lows; those are cool. Those are cool things to happen, and you know, and we came out on top, so it just made everything that much better.
You know, you've obviously again being a local guy, so you're a Cardinal fan too, and obviously you do the special assignment stuff for the Cardinals. To see Yachty now, and you know him obviously very well, the situation with him and the contract and everything like this, I mean, we've talked about it on here, the contract, but outside of the contract, what Yachty is to this club, I tell people all the time, I'm not quite sure he could do anything wrong here because of the things that he has done for this franchise. You mentioned, I mean, the home run against the Mets, standing up to Brandon Phillips, all the things. I mean, this is the guy. Were you happy to see? I mean, was it something that had to happen, him finish here?
Well, if you remember, in 2004, the World Series against Red Sox, when Manny Ramirez was trying to steal signs, and Yachty was a rookie.
Yeah.
And Yachty got up in his face and talked to him about it, and everybody's like, whoa, what's, you know, this rookie kid's doing this? And then you kind of realize what
– I forgot about that.
Yeah, I did too.
What kind of person he's going to be, what kind of player, and then he's put his heart and soul into this organization. And he kind of runs the whole pitching, you know, meetings that we have, and he's up till 2 or 3 in the morning going over videos of everything. He takes his job so seriously. He pours his heart and soul in it. And like he was saying, he goes, I've given these guys everything I can give them. And he's not going to stop. And for them to – then the Cardinals ended up and gave him an extension that meant a lot on both sides. And I think everybody's going to be happy.
Well, you know, it's funny. Obviously, we know what he is on the field. Mm-hmm. And we get a good glimpse of what he is off the field because basically the Cardinals have done a good job. The other players have done a good job of making sure that we know how important he is to everything other than just catching, throwing, and hitting the mental part. But the things you're talking about that we don't know and don't see, the staying up till 3, the doing all this – you know, it's funny. We were with Benji the other day, and we actually had the opportunity to have Yachty call in and talk about his new contract. And when we were trying to figure out if that was even going to happen, it was because on their off day after opening day, he's at the stadium with his personal trainer working out all day. So these are the things that he does, and he's not the only one. Now, mind you, it's right. A lot of guys. This is, again, the things that go on that we don't see as fans that are all part of the thing that you guys do, which – you know, I don't know that we take them for granted, but I just don't think we see them and don't think about them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, not to throw in man ball again, but I think a lot of guys out there
to throw in man ball.
But I mean, a lot of fans out there think that you roll up, you know, half an hour before game time and do a little stretch, throw some seeds and, you know, get dressed and you're just sitting around till the ninth inning. But there's a lot more that goes into the preparation. It's a full-time job plus. Because of the amount of hours that you spend at the stadium, and a guy like Yachty, who's, and I'm sure everybody was like this. Now that we're into this generation, it's working out. It's meal planning, you know, making sure you're eating right, you got your rest, getting your running your foul poles or right. Stretching and all that. What's a day like in major leagues like right now for, you know, a normal 7 o'clock game?
Well, a lot of guys. I mean, it's, you know, they get there at noon. You know, so they're doing their 9 to 5, so to speak, mm-hmm. But it's just a different, you know, it's from noon to 11 at night, you know, it's 11-hour day, and that's just on a day game. I mean, off days, you do the same kind of thing. You got to get up and you got to get moving around, and believe it or not, a lot of players hate days off because we're creatures of habit, and when you wake up and you're ready to go to the field and you don't get to go, it's kind of a weird feeling, but just the days you become, like I said, a creature of habit. You get up. You work out, you come back, you eat breakfast, and you go to lunch, and then you just got to keep going and going and going. You get to the field. I'm sure Yachty gets there probably at 11, starts going over video, starts going over his game plan for the pitchers, for the starter, then each reliever who's available for the day. I mean, there's nothing that he's not ready for when a pitcher or a pinch hitter comes up or a regular hitter. He knows everybody's strengths and weaknesses for their hitters and for our pitchers. And, you know, he's – you know, and he learned from one of the best, too. He was there with Mike Matheny. And this new kid that we have in the minor leagues now, Carson Kelly, who's probably going to be in Triple-A all this year and then probably come up and start learning from Yachty to take over in the next couple years. But he's going to learn from the best. So, I mean, the organization's in good hands, and they made sure of that for the next 3 years.
Great.
So, all right, so take us through, I guess, for you, what has brought you here full circle. Let's take us to the end. So you get your 300 save. You know, you talked about what a great evening it was, you know, Fast Eddie comes right. out and everything like this. Did you know, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to go? Or was it tough for you to hang him up?
No, it was I did that in 2011 with the Mets. And then I didn't think I was going to play the next year. And my agent called me and said, hey, Jerry DePoto, who I played with when I was a rookie with the Mets, became the GM for the Angels. And he wants to know if you want to come play for him. And I said, sure. I mean, I'll give it another year. I just had to get back in shape again. And I went to Anaheim, and I pitched the whole year without going on the DL. And that's when but I also knew it was taking me where it used to take me 15 minutes to get ready to go out and throw. Now it was taking me an hour and a half, 2 hours to get ready to go out and throw 20 pitches with my body old and decrepit. And I knew towards the end of the year, like in September, the 40-man roster expands and all the young kids come up. So I knew that was about that time for let the young kids to start throwing. And I told Soch that day, I said, just put me in a day. This is going to be my last day. And I went in, and I struck out the last guy I faced, and then I threw my hat to a kid in the front row because that's what I did every day. Every time I got a save, I always gave the baseball to a kid in the front row somewhere. And I didn't have the ball because it wasn't a save, so I gave the kid my hat. And then I knew it was it. And it was just I sat on the bench, took a big, maybe a big breath, maybe a couple tears or whatever, and you know, I knew I was never going to be watching BP again, the big leagues and all this kind of stuff. A lot of stuff goes through your mind, and just, you know, 20 years, you know, doing it for 22 years with the minor leagues, everything just flashes in about 5 seconds, and it's just it's overwhelming.
So you're done. How's the adjustment for you? Talked about being a creature of habit. I mean,
yeah.
Now you get into a complete another habit. I mean, now the positive part is now you can be at more stuff with your family. Now you can, but man, it's got to be you almost. Your wife probably got tired of you for a little while there. You hear that a lot.
Yeah, it was probably the hardest year of our marriage was that first year of me retiring because we're not used to being around each other that much, you know. And like I said, I mean, she became a creature. I was always gone. She was a single married mother,
right?
You know, to tell the truth,
doing everything.
And then when I was there, all I did was get in the way. All I did was piss her off. Yeah. I mean, no matter what I did, she goes, "You need to go somewhere and get out of here. You're just ruining everything." And it was hard on us. I mean, you think, oh, I'm going to retire now. I get to spend time with my family and be with my wife, and it's going to be fun again. It's going to be like newlyweds again. And No, not so much. But that was probably the hardest year of our marriage, is just learning to be around each other again. But we got through it, and now we're happy, and we're running around crazy with kids and chasing them everywhere. Sometimes I think, you know, why did I play baseball for so long? I missed all this.
Yeah.
But now I try to do as much as I can with the kids, and I put everything else on hold because I missed so much when the older one was younger.
Well, let's so we get you in the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, we got to get you
in. We're going to get you in there. Obviously, raise the kids. What's life look like for Jason Isringhausen? You had a little stint coaching there at SIU Edwardsville with Tony Stecklin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did the pitching side of it. Rumors were abound that you were going to do some high school stuff with one of the local high schools here, be involved. What does your life look like after the girls are kind of a little bit older?
I don't know. I mean, I've got 10 years before the youngest one graduates high school. So right now it's kind of just doing what I'm doing now, the part-time stuff, just keeping my foot in the door. And then when we become empty nesters, you know, my wife and I, Lori, we'll just sit down and decide what we want to do. I was offered to interview for a big league coaching job last year, and I turned it down. So I just, I don't know. You know, I'm enjoying what I'm doing now, enjoying being able to go to the kids' soccer practices and soccer games all the time, and volleyball. So I don't really know what the future holds. I mean, if it doesn't hold anything, I'm fine with that. Or maybe later we become a bullpen coach somewhere in San Diego and enjoy the sunshine for the summer. I mean, it's I'm lucky enough to where I have I had a decent career where people still know who I am, and then just keeping my foot in the door and trying different roles within the organization,
mm-hmm.
It just builds your resume. You know, I'm being a roving pitching instructor, doing like a character coach, doing rehab coordinator down in Florida, maybe coming up in the next couple of years. I don't really know, but just keep trying to add to what I do in baseball. Just help me out.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think you had a little bit better than just a little bit of a good career there. Two-time All-Star, right?
So, yeah,
how
so.
Was that?
That was
to be around that. I mean,
that's when you become just a fan. You know, you're sitting down in the clubhouse, and then everybody's around you who you like looked up to, kind of. I mean, my first year in Oakland, I became like an All-Star. And so you're sitting there with the Jeters and the Clemens uh-huh. and the Nomar Garcia. I mean, all the superstars. I'm like, what the hell am I doing in here? But it worked out well. And then I did it once again in Atlanta with the Cardinals. And we had, I think, six or seven of us that went that year with the Cardinals. So, I mean, it was a great time. Those things don't even really register with me because you're with your teammates every day throughout 6, 7, 8 months. So those are the times you really remember. Just the accolades. They come if you're doing your job, so
right.
to speak, and you're doing it for the guy next to you because you don't want to let the guy next to you down, or you don't want to let the fans down. And, you know, you do your job, you get some cool things. But if you don't do your job, you're not in the game very long. So it was just a matter of just doing my job and just keeping my head down and just keep going.
You know, you think about – we talked a little bit about family. Expectations for your daughters. Now they're involved in sports. How's that? I mean, it's obviously they're not boys, so they're not playing baseball.
Right.
But I don't know that it's necessarily always different. I mean, I think people assume they're going to be this or that. Is that hard, or do you have to temper those expectations down a little bit or have some real conversations with them?
I try to have conversations with my oldest daughter about it. When she was five, she went out for softball, and the coach actually said, because she wasn't very good at all. She was terrible, and the coach actually said, well, we just thought she'd be better. And I'm just like, well, she's a five-year-old girl who's never played softball before, and she likes to play with her hair and play in the dirt a little bit. So,
oh man!
But now it's I try to tell her that there's extra pressure on her a little bit,
yeah.
and people are going to be watching. So, And it's the same thing, you know, with the social media. I just don't want to see her getting in trouble doing something stupid. And just try to, you know, I'm the mean father. Nobody else's parent does this to their, you know, taking her phone away and checking her accounts and all that. Just trying to keep up on and make sure she don't do anything
too bad. Well, you can tell her that's not true.
Yeah,
it goes down at my house. I know
it goes down at my house.
It's going down.
We get the whole, hey, we got excellence coming in and we got mediocrity coming out. Yeah. That's not a good good return on investment. But Jim and I have had that experience where we got to tell a bunch of seven-year-olds that they weren't good enough to play baseball. And That's kind of hard to swallow because like you said, I mean, you were a late bloomer. I think I was a late bloomer. A kid that's 7 or 5 or, you know, even 13 or 15.
We did it one year. We had tryouts.
Yeah, we had tryouts.
For a team. And, you know, and you don't realize, I mean, it's all these kids show up. And you're not expecting it. And, you know, you only have room for so many.
Right.
And I told Steve, how do you handle this? I said, well, number one, you don't say, you're not good enough. You know, it's you're not ready. That's number one. But that's just from being a human being. But this last time, I mean, never a full blown one ever again.
Never
because
again.
It just something not right about. Again, to each their own. Not complaining about what other people do. I have no truck in that fight, especially anymore. But for me personally, it was one of the most awful nights of my life. I remember doing it. It was one of the most awful nights of my life.
But we had 80 some odd kids come out for a 7U tryout for
baseball.
10 or 11 spots, and we looked at each other, and we were just evaluators. It was somebody else's team because we had like a 9 or 10-year-old team, and we looked at each other and go, this is unbelievable. How do you tell a 7-year-old that
you can't play?
You can't play. And all they wanted to do was play on this team.
You know what we did do, though, I will say, and again, not to say we did it right or did it, because believe me, we did a lot of things wrong. But the year we did it, and you know some of those guys, because that was the age group your daughter was part of, you know, played soccer with them. We talked a little bit about beforehand. You know, we had so many kids that year, that was before you were involved, we formed another team out of that thing because it was like, it's one thing to tell, there's enough kids here to have 4 teams, but we didn't know enough people to even coach 4 teams.
Right.
But it's like, at least we can do 2, because I knew some of those other guys would step up and coach a team of kids maybe that were more involved in other sports and things like that. And so at least we did that. You know, at least it was like, hey, there's a lot of kids here. Let's try to do something. Because at the end of the day, what does a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old kid want to do? They just want to play.
Right.
You know, the parent wants them to wear a certain uniform. The parent wants them to do this or do that. A kid just wants to play. And that probably brings back a lot of memories for you when you were young, because all you did was show up and play.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, man, it's a job. Now, a great job, but a job nonetheless. So I'm glad you came on today. Like I said, I think we learned a lot about you and your journey. It's very impressive. It's, you know, something that every kid dreams of, really, whether it's a local situation or not. But, again, you say it all the time. For a guy like you, I can't imagine how many times you may have hit a home run in Game 7 of the World Series for the Cardinals, and then you wind up in Busch Stadium, and you wind up in that motorcade coming out after a year after a World Series. You get that 300 save, a major accomplishment that, you know, I'm sure every now and again you may sit down and think back and go, man, I did that.
Yeah, it's been, like I said, I mean, it just, you sit down right now and I can just remember everything from the day I was driving from the airport to spring training with the Mets, my first year getting drafted, until I walked away from it. And it's just a whirlwind of emotion, but, you know, I did it the only way I knew how, and that was going 100%. Sometimes it was right, sometimes it was wrong, sometimes I hurt myself, sometimes I did it. You know, maybe I made some dumb mistakes along the way, but I would never change anything.
You know, the one question we missed that I got to ask you before we go is the day you did get called up, because that's the day, right? Like, for a guy, that's the day, right?
Right.
But describe that. I mean, who'd you call first? Where were you? What was the...
I was in AAA, and I remember getting a phone call from my manager. I think it was Toby Hera was our manager. He called me in the office. He said, hey, you're going to go to the big leagues. You're going to start on this day. But then I had been selected to go to the AAA All-Star game too. So I went to the AAA All-Star game and pitched knowing that I was going to the big leagues the next day. So I didn't really care what happened in the AAA All-Star game. But we went there and we had some fun, you know, and I pitched 2 innings to start the game. And they let me start it and everything. And it was a big production. And like you said, I mean, it was a whirlwind of emotions then, because we were so touted. Myself and those other guys were kind of the reason why this whole pitch count thing came about, because we all blew out our elbows and stuff like that. And I was able to come back and have a decent career, but the other guys were not. But, you know, you get to New York, and I'm a 22-year-old kid from Brighton, and with some money in your pocket, and you live and learn. You know, you're going, you're getting $25,000 to go to a bar mitzvah and hang out with a family and stuff like that. I mean, that's just the kind of stuff that went on.
They didn't
in
get
New York.
You on a three-card Monty on the corner,
no,
did they?
No, they didn't.
Jimmy falls for that every time.
First phone call, who was it to?
Oh, it was to Mom and Dad, for sure. Yeah. And I still remember the day that I got drafted and I signed from Lewis and Clark.
Did you know you were getting drafted? Like, was it one of those deals where you knew it was coming? It was just a matter of who it was?
Well, that's what it used to be. No, I wasn't one of those. But back in that day, we used to do what they called a draft and follow. So you got drafted 1 year, they watched you for another year, and then they would just give you a bonus wherever you'd slotted into where they thought. And so I got drafted after my freshman year, and I signed after my sophomore year. And my dad said, hey, yeah, go sign this. Go have fun for a year and come back, and I'll get you a job at Shell Oil where he worked. And then I always give him crap about that. I said he wasn't a very good evaluator of talent because he always said that Barry Sanders would never make it in the NFL, too. He was too small. So there's two strikes against him. So I always give him crap about that. So when I came home from retiring, I said, hey, it took me 22 years to prove you wrong, but I appreciate you giving me that motivation saying that I'd never make it.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome. Yeah. So we're here at Lineup Media Group and thank them for
sure,
providing
absolutely.
All this and our friend Jeff Cooper. Jim, do we have is there a possible book deal here that we can
a
ink
book
him?
Deal?
I mean, he's got
Man.
22 years and maybe we do the Molina movie and we do the Isringhausen
no
book.
Movie.
Well,
I'd bring too many people down with me. I can't do a movie.
I was going to say, we had to sign off on can't ask this, can't know.
Yeah,
no, it wasn't anything like that. But no, it was. Listen, I'm with you. You want to do a book? We'll do it. Let's
no,
do it.
No
book. We could really do that. No, thanks for doing this, man. Like I said, I think it gave a lot of fans some insight as to who you are. I mean. You know, a lot of people know you very well. The local thing, I think, is awesome. You know, there's other players out there that have kind of lived that and been through that. Those are always great stories. But to it's one thing to play. It's another thing to 300 saves, and now you're up for the Cardinal Hall of Fame. We wish you luck in that. And, again, what'd you have?
Yeah,
you had that again? Cardinals.com/HOF.
Right.
All right, make sure if you're out there. And you're voting, vote early, vote often. We can honestly, you know, this isn't a real political election, so you can vote early and vote often. We encourage you to do it. It's been a tremendous guest for us.
We're
local,
you,
so yeah.
Call
I mean,
you a fan of the show now, right?
Yeah, fan yes, of the
totally.
Show. Fan
totally.
Of the show.
Total
we can,
fan.
We can expect retweets and all that every show, right? We can. Right. Man, we got
well,
him on
we,
that.
Well,
we
well,
signed that, right? That thing you signed wasn't an autograph. That was a contract. But no, hey, being local. But, you know, I know that, you know, you're working for the Cardinals, so, you know, we don't want to, you know, overdo it. But, man, we'd love you to stop by from time to time and jump in on the show and just, you know,
yeah, whatever you if you want to talk about the double switches and all
if
that
you,
stuff.
If you need to fill some boring airtime, just give me a call.
But hey, listen. First and foremost, Jim runs off a time of possession. He's
right.
He's a guy. He loves to talk. So I'm more like the guy on Major League.
You're the color guy,
the
Monty.
Color. Yeah,
well, exactly. Hey, I encourage him to jump in. You know, hey, you know what it's like when you're playing with feeble talent. You look around and they got the deer in the headlight looking. You got to go. I mean, what are you going to do? Sit here with dead air?
So no, we'll love to have you on again
anytime.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no,
we'll
wish you luck with this again one more time. cardinals.com/hall of fame. Hey, we hope you enjoyed this. Was our Facebook Live first time we did this. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll start doing it a little more, obviously, maybe when we have guys like Jason in or Benji's in town. I know you guys, you know, we're not near as
well,
interesting.
I
as these
know
guys.
A lot of people,
and you're definitely not as pretty.
No, I know a lot. Well, I usually get to sit there, so I get to hide the
fact.
Yeah,
you got booty.
But here's the deal: I know a lot of people, a lot of the lady listeners out there, want to see what Fish looks like because he has that sexy voice.
Oh,
so
my God.
We're going to have to go Facebook
All
Live
right.
when
so
we get Fish
Facebook
back in.
Live with Fish. We'll roll it up for sure, but. No, this was great, man. Thanks for doing this.
No,
like
I appreciate
said,
it.
You're welcome anytime. Like I said, being local, we could always use some interesting talk on here for sure.
Well, thank you very much.
That's Jason Isringhausen. Like I said, local product that, you know, great career, 300 saves, fulfilled a lifelong childhood dream playing for his team, but proud to have been a Met, proud to have been an A, proud to have just put on a uniform every day, and we wish him luck. And again, we encourage you to do that. Cardinals.com/Hall of Fame. Hey, don't forget, we are Two Birds on a Bat, and you can check us out at twobirdsonabat.com. It's where you can hear all the podcasts. You can go back and listen to past episodes, but it's also the easiest way to subscribe to the show. Once you get on there, you're just going to click subscribe to the podcast. It is free. It'll keep you in tune with what we're doing. Twitter, love Twitter. I call it drunk Twitter, Twitterverse, whatever you want to call it. 140 characters. You get an opportunity to say whatever you want with absolutely no repercussions to befall upon you whatsoever, except for maybe a few jawbacks. So definitely at Birds on a Bat Show, that's us. If you're a Cardinal fan and you follow us, we're going to follow you back. Just get to Facebook, Two Birds on a Bat. You'll find us there. We started the new Cardinal group, Birds on a Bat. We would love you guys to be a part of it. We love all the things that are going on, especially with our friend RallySquirrel.com. They've kind of inspired us to start another one. The Cardinal Freak, Cardinal Nation, our good friend Chris Lawless, all the great Facebook pages, all the great Twitter accounts. We highly encourage you to become a part of it. Steve-O mentioned it. We couldn't do the show without lineupmedia.fm. You're changing how you want to listen to what you want to listen to. You want to do it when you want to do it, how you want to do it, and where you want to do it. Check out lineupmedia.fm. If you like our podcast, I assure you there'll be more on there that you'd enjoy. We have other baseball ones. We have the Blues ones. If you're a Cardinal fan, you're probably a Blues fan. Great relationship between those two franchises. If you're lots of Cowboys fans now in St. Louis, our good friend Jono does the Cowboys podcast along with Steve-O. You're not a Cowboys fan, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay, great. You're welcome here.
No, we'll cut that one tomorrow, too. We got a lot of
he's a Packer
news.
Fan like Benji, we're in business.
No, Packer fan.
Who we got?
I don't follow any football. It used to be the Chargers because Kellen Winslow from East St. Louis played there. My dad told me.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So you're good in my book as long as it's not the Cowboys. We know. Hopefully Jono's watching and he'll enjoy that. But no, make sure you check them out, lineupmedia.fm. They know that your entertainment time is valuable. They take it very serious. I guarantee you'll find another podcast that you'd enjoy. For Steve-O, for Benji, who's actually – we're getting ready to go meet down at the ballpark.
No,
I know, rained out. He's wondering where we're at because he's hungry.
Bring your umbrellas.
We got to get going.
Yep.
But, yeah, rained out today. Looks like it's postponed already.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
You believe that one, yeah. Like I said, Benji's texted me going, hey, we're going to lunch. Where are you? So
let's
we got to
get
going.
Lunch.
But and for Jason Isringhausen, again, he's been a great guest. We appreciate him being on. We'll see you guys tomorrow for the regular show. Have Benji in studio again. Although now we got a day game again tomorrow, so we got all kinds of stuff to work around tomorrow. But we will figure it out because we enjoy bringing you the show. For Jim, Steve, Jason, Benji, Fish, who's not here, producer Andrew, thank you so much for all your help. Let's go Birds.
Go Birds.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
You need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
This podcast was a presentation of lightupmedia.fm.